this computer, but it's not the computer. So I don't know how to use it. So anyway, y'all all have technical problems with the computer because you actually have to engage them, and I don't have that problem because I don't know how to do it. So as long as y'all don't turn it on me, we won't have that problem. This morning, as I was getting ready to leave, Charlie gave me the lesson for this evening, and he didn't even know it. So I was walking out, and I said, "How are you doing, Charlie?" He said, "Well, I can't complain." And I said, "Well, it wouldn't do any good." And he said, "No, my wife wouldn't take up for him or whatever." And I said, "Well, if he was the Lord, he might strike you dead for complaining." And we laughed about it and walked out. And it got me to thinking about complaining. So anyway, I told him, that might make a good lesson. So I went home, and that's what it's going to be about tonight, is complaining. So if this goes real long, y'all don't complain about it. if you'll get your Bibles and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I'm going to read a few verses here, about 13 of them. And Paul is writing to the Corinthians about Old Testament examples and about lessons that we need to learn from Old Testament examples. And he gives us, I think it's four examples in this short few verses, and then makes an application. And so I want to start here, and then we're going to go do some work in the Old Testament. In verse 1 it says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them God was not well pleased. For their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now in all things, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." So he starts by describing this transition of the people of Israel through the wilderness, and they cross over the sea, and there's the cloud of God is above them, and so they're baptized between the waters and with water over the top of them, following Moses. And he says they went through the same relationship change as a chosen people. As a people they became the chosen people of God and were baptized. It says they ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink. They were given the same sustenance that we're given, that these brethren in Corinth were given. They were given God's word and God's direction and were brought into a relationship with him. And he said, but God wasn't well pleased with them, because as they traveled, they made mistakes and they had problems and issues, and they rebelled against God and they sought after their own worldly lust. And many of them, as it describes, their bodies were strewn across the wilderness. And so God allowed them to die. And for 40 years, they wandered through the wilderness, and God allowed all these people to pass away. And in fact, not just out of old age, but many times, as he points out here, he brought immediate and swift judgment on them because of their actions and the things that they were doing. And so He said when they went after idolatrous worship, he killed some. When they went after when they stood before God and tempted Christ, it says, by putting themselves up against him, he sent serpents into their midst. When they complained, they were destroyed. And so he says they dealt with it very swiftly and concisely as things happened, beyond just the laboring of traveling and allowing people to die. But he says their bodies were scattered to the wilderness. So then when we get down to verse 11, he says, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. So the record of all those events, we could go back and study each one of these events in the Old Testament. That record has been preserved for us, and he says it was preserved for you for your admonition, so that you don't follow the same suit. And he says, therefore let him who stands or thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. We might think in our modern world with our written word of God and with the group that we have as members of the church and as other churches are established and with the apostles' doctrine that's been delivered to us and with all the things that we have the blessing of knowing and the mystery that's been revealed to us and how the gospel is inclusive of everyone, not just the people of Israel, we might think that we are somewhat shielded from those same temptations that they were in Israel. And we look at that, we're like, well, how could they complain, or how could they go after idolatry, or how could they, you know, stand against God and put themselves up on his level? And how could Aaron and Miriam stand before God and Moses and say, well, we're just as important as Moses, your chosen leader? And we think, well, we would never do that. But he says here that the reason he's writing it and using these examples, and the reason God preserved the examples, was because we're very susceptible to exactly the same thing. And so he says, no temptation, verse 13, has overtaken you except such as is common to man. Not man today, but man of all time. Man has not changed in our spirit and our passions and our lust and the things that drive us, our intents, haven't changed. People are not any different than they were when Adam and Eve were put on earth. And so he said, I'm writing you this because God provided you this tool for you to learn and to grow. And so then he says, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation also makes a way of escape. So he says, this is not the end of the world, but learn from the examples and I'm going to help you, and God will give you the tools to overcome and to change the course of your history so that you don't repeat their history. If you will, turn over to Exodus chapter 16. So the book of Exodus, as we know, they exited the land of Egypt. They were headed for the promised land, and through a series of events, they were stalled in the wilderness for 40 years, and I guess more than 99% of them didn't go into Canaan, including Moses. And so in this time period, we have Exodus, most of Exodus, and Deuteronomy and Numbers, and those books are all written about that time period. And in Exodus 16, they have just crossed the Red Sea. They haven't gotten to Mount Sinai yet. They're just immediately past it. The chapter before is the Song of Moses. They had just come across the sea. They're delivered. They've got away from the Egyptians. They just watched the Egyptians all get destroyed, Pharaoh with them. And so they get there. The first thing they do in verse 22 of the last chapter was complain about the bitter water, so he makes the water sweet. And then now we're here, and they're complaining about the bread, or not having food. And they just realize, wait a minute, we left Egypt and there's nothing to eat out here in the wilderness. And none of these people have ever been outside of Egypt. They all grew up there, generations of them. For 400 years they've been in Egypt, and they had no idea what life was like outside the society that they lived in. They just were ready to get away from it. Well, they got away, and now they're out there with nothing. Now it's the time for them to trust God and to figure out who God is, and this God that just delivered them and save them from their bondage and brought them to freedom, they're going to have to rely on him. And so in verse 3, it says, and the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, where we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread till we were full. For you have brought us out to this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." So they paint this picture to Moses. We were sitting there by a pot full of meat, and we had bread till we were completely full, and we had everything we needed. And look, there's nothing out here, and we're all going to die of starvation, and it's all your fault, Moses. And if the Lord, if you just left us where we were at, we were fine, and we could have died in our misery there in Egypt. And so Moses entreats God. He says, the people are complaining. They need food. They have a point. And so God says, well, I'm going to send them food, and I'm going to send them the manna, and I'm going to send them some quail. And so just a few verses later, he describes how they're going to have this bread out there that's going to show up. And he sends them some quail in verse 13, and it covered the camp. And they do. And right after that do, there was some bread that showed up, some special bread from God. The people didn't know what it was, and so they described it. And the test was that they were to take exactly the amount that they needed, and no more. And on the sixth day, they were going to take enough for 2 days. And what happened? The people didn't listen to God, so they took a little bit more than they needed. And what they find out the next night was when they opened their pots with the bread, it had rotted and worms were in it, and it was stinking. And so Moses was upset and said, I told you, God said to do this. So they had a restart. God said, well, I told them to do it, and there's consequences, and they need to learn who I am and what I am and what my expectation is. And so this was a soft start to their training program of leaving Egypt and learning to trust God completely. When we go, if you'll jump forward to Numbers chapter 11, this is where I wanted to go to. We have in chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. For the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. The people cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and fire was quenched." They were complaining about their bread. They were complaining about their enemies. They were complaining about a lot of different things. But the fact that they complained, it upset God because of the way that they went about it. They didn't trust God. For years now, they've been traveling already. Well, not years, but about a year, I think, at this point. And they've gone through several situations. God has helped them survive up to this point. And they get to this point and they complain against God. And God knows that he's going to take care of them. They should know that God is going to take care of them. But their complaint was such that it upset God, and God sent fire from heaven and destroyed some of them, which is the reference that we read in 1 Corinthians 10. In verse 5 it says, "We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic, but now our whole being is dried up and there's nothing at all except this manna before our eyes." In Exodus 16, God puts forward a plan to preserve them unconditionally. He says, "You don't have to worry about your food. I'm going to send you this food." Has been described by several different people and what it was, but it's a bread that God sent. And he said, it will be everything you need. And at one time he gave them quail, and he said, "I'll provide for you." So now for all this time, they have decided that this meal is bland and it's boring and it's not got what they want. And they said, "Well, we remember all the spices and the garlic and the leeks and the things that Egypt offered." And so now they're right back to Egypt. "Well, we wish we were in Egypt." And so the complaint wasn't that God wasn't taking care of them. It was that it wasn't taking care of him the way they wanted to be taken care of. And so when the dew fell on the ground in verse 9 that night, manna fell on it, and Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone on the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused. Moses was also displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight? And you have laid this burden of all these people on me. Did I conceive all these people? Did I beget them? And you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers. Where am I to get meat to give all of these people? For they weep over me, saying, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' I am not able to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, please kill me here and now, if I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness." That's quite the speech. I read that 3 or 4 times. He actually tells God, "Kill me right now so I don't have to see my own wretchedness." He was depressed and overwhelmed by those people. This wasn't just, "Hey, Moses, we're tired of our food." This was an oppressive message over and over and over. They were complaining all the time. There was hundreds of thousands of people complaining that they were having to eat this free food that God provided for them, while they're going to a promised land that God was providing for them, while they were liberated from Egypt, that God had provided the liberty, and while he had destroyed their enemies for them, that God had made that happen, that God used his pathway to get rid of their enemies. And they still found it to complain against Moses and made it Moses' problem. And so it put so much pressure on Moses that Moses was about to crack. He was oppressed, and he said, "I'm a wretched soul, and this is unfair that you brought me here." And I don't think Moses was really complaining. He was asking God for relief. Because in verse 16 and following, God says, "You know what? You're right. Get 70 men, bring them here, of the elders of the people, and I'm going to put a portion of your spirit on them so that they can help and take some of this burden, and they can help deal with these problems, and they will see and be in communion with me. So when I give you instruction, basically they're going to get the instruction, and they will take some of the pressure off of you having to deliver the message all the time." And so in a nutshell, that's what he does. And he takes these 70 men. They appear, all but 2 of them. They appear, God appears to all of them and Moses together. And so then Moses says, "This is what God's delivered the message," and they go out and prophesy God's message to the people and share in some of the burden. And so Moses is relieved, but the solution has not come yet. But he tells in this message that he gives Moses and the 70, he says, "I'm going to give them what they asked for. And they've complained against me, and there's not enough variety. And you remember the quail we had before? I'm going to bring the quail back, and I'm going to give them quail until there's going to be so much quail, it's going to come out of their nostrils," I think is how he puts it. And it's not going to be quail for 1 day or 2 days or morning and evening. It's going to be so much quail, they'll be sick of it. And he says, "And you tell them that I said they're going to be sick of it." And he does. He goes out and he gives them the message. And the 70 go out and give them the message. And what happens the next night? A wind over the sea blows in a whole bunch of quail, and it says it was 2 cubits deep of quail over the whole land for a mile out. I think it was a mile out from the camp, but it might have been a mile away from the camp is where the quail were at. But either way, all the people rush out there, and they're filling up all of these buckets and baskets and whatever full of quail, and they bring it all back. And it says, and while the meat was still in their teeth, God's anger was aroused. And then you read it again. You're like, while the meat was still in their teeth, God's anger was aroused. Why was God's anger aroused? He just provided the meat for them. And now he's upset because they're eating it. Well, 2 things. 1, they weren't thankful for it. They made their demands. God followed through and gave them what they wanted. And they rushed out there like a bunch of hyenas and start gathering the stuff up in great bulk. And they were already taught before, back in Exodus 16, to only take what you need to take. And they went out there and got it. And he said, "I'm going to give them a lot." Well, what happens to 2 or 3 feet deep of quail and bodies of meat just out there rotten after a while? Then they got to smell that after, for a long time, on and on and on. When you have all that meat there and the pathogens, I guess you'd say, that are in it from that, and it's not fresh anymore, and you're sitting there eating it, what did God release among them? He said he released a plague, and it started killing them all. Well, the plague may have come in with the birds. It might have been bird flu. I don't know. But it was some kind of a thing that God released on them as punishment to them. So he brought them the meat, but with the meat came a plague, and the plague started destroying people. And the reason he says he did it was because of their complaining. Because they didn't complain against Moses. Moses makes the point when he takes it to him. He says, "You're not making this complaint against me. You're complaining against God. You think you're bringing it to me, and I'm your leader, but God put me in this position. But when you sin against me, you're not sinning against me, you're sinning against God himself. And so what you've done is you've brought judgment on yourself." And so God brought the judgment to them. And so many people died. They had died because of the fire that came down, then they died because of the plague, because of this abuse of God's favor that he had brought to them. And so God provides them what they asked for, but he punishes those that took advantage of it. Their complaint got something done, and a lot of times our complaints get something done. And sometimes we think our complaints have a good excuse and why we should be allowed to complain about whatever it is that we complain about, and that we should be able to grumble against our brethren or grumble against the leadership of the church, or that we should be able to complain about, you know, our situation in life and the losses or the prohibitions that we incur or that we come up against. And so we lodge our complaint wherever somebody will listen to us. We're not sinning against the person that we are complaining or grumbling against. We're sinning against God. And there are consequences to that. And no, God's probably not going to send a bunch of quail out here in the churchyard for us to go collect and die of a plague. But our complaint is being heard, and it'll be acted on, and we will have judgment at some point for that. And so it's something we have to recognize. And like Paul said, these stories were recorded for us for a reason, so we could learn from it, because man has not changed. Our spirits and our lust and our desires and our tendencies are the same as those people's there were. And so we have to take that into account. Turn over to Philippians chapter 4. When the Israelites ran up against something that was too big for them that they couldn't fix. There wasn't herds of wild animals for them to go and slaughter to have meat. There wasn't flocks and herds big enough to provide for all their desires as far as what they wanted to eat. And God knew that when he took them out, God was providing for them in his way. And in fact, when the burden, God told Moses, he said, tomorrow there's going to be meat for everybody. And Moses said, how am I supposed to get that meat? Is there fish that I can catch? Is there animals out here I don't know about? Is there enough in our flocks? He said, show me how it is I'm supposed to manage this so that I can get it. And God says, you don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And then he blows all this meat in for him. When we have a problem that is too big for us, and we have a complaint, or we think we want to complain about it, what we need to do is turn that complaint into a request of God, a humble request without an anxious spirit, and knowing that God will deliver us and that God will provide for us. In Philippians chapter 4, a verse we're familiar with in verse 6, he says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. How did the people deal with their complaint? They rose up against Moses and made demands. How did Moses deal with his complaint or his issue that he was up against? He went to God and he entreated God, and he went directly to the source, the person, that the one being that could actually deal with the problem or that could help him with the problem. And so you have two different people or two different groups dealing with the same issue. And here in Philippians, he says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Knowing that God will provide and that God will give you the answer. It might not be the answer you want. He says, don't be anxious. Take that request to God, and with humility and care, request God. Be thankful ahead of time for the answer, and entreat God for what it is that you need to be done. And he says in verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. He doesn't say, as soon as you make your request known to God, he's instantly going to grant it. He says, when you take it, your anxious spirit, and you put it on the shelf, and you entreat God, and you ask him for the help, he said, a peace will come over you because you have relied on God, the one being that can actually provide for you. And so you put the burden onto God's shoulders, and then you live in peace. And so you accept what God gives you and the way that God gives you. So he says, the peace of God which surpasses all understanding, something we'll never understand or that anybody else would be able to understand, is what we would come to know. If you would turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. In verse 6 it says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." When I was growing up, I would complain about what we were having for supper, and my mother said, "You got clothes and we got food on the table, so be quiet." And that was the end of the conversation. It wasn't always what I wanted. I was a picky eater. I still am a picky eater. But the truth is, if we have what we need and our needs are met, the most basic needs, as they say, food, clothing, and shelter, if those needs are met, and I'm pretty sure everybody in this room has all those needs met and more, then we have no complaint, is what he's saying. He says, "We brought nothing in this world. It is certain we can take nothing out. Having food, clothing, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Pursuing things that may be out of our reach and that are out of our control for sure will do nothing but just drive us crazy. It will bring us to the point where our pursuit is just that all the time. We lose focus. The children of Israel lost focus on what they had at hand. They had just gained salvation and freedom from Egypt, from bondage. 400 years of bondage had just come to a screeching halt. And they not only left, they left rich. They left with a lot of worldly goods that God had provided for them, because by the time they left, the Egyptians were ready for them to leave. They were helping them load their donkeys and sending them out with stuff because of all of the plagues. And so they were provided for. Then they had food falling from heaven that God had given them. All the things that they needed, and they were on their way to traveling to the place that God was providing for them and was fixing to put them in, and was going to do it in pretty short order if they hadn't kept complaining and had faltered in their faith and whether or not, remember, they all started believing the 10 spies when they came back, and they said, "Oh, they're too big, we can never do it." And God said, "Well, I'll just kill all of you. If you don't want to go there, then y'all can all die and I'll give it to somebody else." It would be a shame for us to not have faith in God, give up all of our blessings, and those blessings fall on somebody else that will have faith in God because we complain about God and are so short-sighted that we don't recognize the faithfulness of God in giving us the things that He's given us here and now, and being thankful for the here and now, for the time and the moments that we're in. Turn over to Matthew chapter 6 and verse 11. In the Lord's Prayer, He says it very simply, "Give us this day our daily bread." When you read that verse, He's praying to the Father. He says, when you pray to the Father, this is how you should pray. Christ was there in the wilderness. According to Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 10, He says, "And they passed through the waters and were baptized, and the rock was behind them, and the rock was Christ." Christ was in the wilderness with these people. The cloud was above them. Christ was behind them, securing their pathway. And He says, "Give us this day our daily bread." They gave a commandment there in Exodus 16. Take the bread that you need for today, eat to your full, and don't take any more, and be content. The commandment that Christ gave all the way back then was exactly the same one that He entreats the disciples to pray for to God. Just give us our daily bread. He's calling on us as Christians today to just look for our daily bread. Not worry about tomorrow, not complain about the prohibitions in life, the things we're prohibited from having, not focus in on the things that we don't have that we think would make our lives better if we had it, or that would make us feel more fulfilled, or that would bring us more glory, or that would make our family look better, or just give us more comfort, or allow us to do less. He says, you just need your daily bread. You need the sustenance and the energy to do today's work. And today's work, then and now, is to promote and glorify God. So how much do we need to promote and glorify God? And when we shed away or pull back all the layers of life and the onion layers of that life represents and all the things in our lives, and you just peel it back, how much do we actually need in our lives to be able to glorify God? And it's not very much. It's our food and our shelter and our clothing and just basic needs. And so everything else that we complain about and that become an issue in our life and that we say, well, I'm really shortened here and I didn't get my fair share over there and these people should give me more of what they have because they have more. And I mean, we see this in our society more so hopefully than in the church, but in the church we can be guilty of it too. As individuals, we can be guilty of it. And as we all as individuals live in society, we can really be bombarded with materialism, and materialism can cause us to have these complaints and to say, well, I'm not getting what everybody else is getting. But how much do we actually need? In James chapter 5, it talks about not grumbling against our brethren, showing love and consideration for them. We could go on all night. There's scriptures on top of scriptures about not complaining, not grumbling, not being upset with other people, being long-suffering, being understanding of other people's situations. But the lesson for us to learn, according to Paul, was for our admonition so that we could be better Christians and more prepared to deal with the wiles of the devil and the things that Satan would throw at us. Because Satan threw those temptations at those people back then, with God above them and Christ behind them, just like it is today. We have God above us and the Spirit here with us, and we have Christ on the cross to look at, and Christ resurrected from the dead and on the right hand of God. And we have all of those blessings, and we have salvation, and we have direct access to it through the Father. What do we have to complain about? I hope that this message has been beneficial. And if there's anyone here tonight that has any need to make something right in their life, or if with brethren can help in any way, we'd ask you to come forward, stand and sing.